Okay, we'll start. Well, what you've been waiting for, some biography of Rashi.
Ooh!
It's not going to take us the whole class. We have some other, a lot of things on the agenda today. The reason it took me so, even though you requested this maybe a month into the Zman, into the year, right? The reason it took me so long is because I have two biographies of Rashi at home. One is this one. They're the two newest ones, by the way. There must be, besides these two, there must be about four or five scholarly biographies of Rashi, which I haven't read. This is Rashi Hayav Peirushov by Rabbi Rafael Halperin, four volumes. And there is another biography of Rashi by Professor Avraham Grossman, one volume. And I wanted to read over Professor Grossman's, which is heavy. It's heavy. It's a academic work. I looked all over my house for it. I couldn't find it. I mean, it's there somewhere. That doesn't mean it's not there. But I couldn't find that just as well, because, you know, he gets into too much detail for us. Rabbi Halperin does certainly a good job. Let me start with the fact that if you're going to write a biography of Rashi, you've undertaken something rather difficult, because we don't know too much about him. Listen, write biographies of people who lived 1,000 years ago. How much can you know? Mm-hmm. Right? Though with Rashi, we have there's stories about him passed down, miracle stories and all. You know, if miracle stories are true about anybody, they could be true about Rashi, right? But who knows? We have certain hard facts about Rashi, written by either himself or by his contemporaries. So let me spend a little time going through the basics. Rashi, born, we'll stick with the secular years, in the year 1040, passed away in the year 1065. He was born, most likely, in a city named... Born in the year 1040, died in the year 1105 at the age of 65.
Okay.
In 15 years, not a bit. No, even Rashi. Okay, he was born in a city in France. I don't want to pronounce it because I'm going to probably pronounce it wrong. I will spell it for you. Troyes. Troyes? I don't know. Okay, that's where he was born. By all accounts, he was a child prodigy. I don't know what he knew by heart at the age of 3, but he was a child prodigy. There were no yeshivas in France in his day. So he had to go to Germany, Western Germany, the Rhineland. That is the part of Germany west of the Rhine. That was the center of Ashkenazi Jewry in those days. Ashkenazi Jewry, nowadays Ashkenazim, I don't know, outnumber Sephardim probably 3 or 4 to 1, right? In those days, in Rashi's day, there were, I think by reasonable estimates, 20,000 Ashkenazi Jews all together, and a few million Sephardi Jews. I mean, I know how the Ashkenazim multiplied. I don't know where the Sephardim disappeared to, because by normal rates of reproduction, there should be 50 million of them nowadays. I don't know. I know there was lots of forced conversion among the Arabs. I don't know. But the Ashkenazim were a little far-off community, fairly distant from the major Jewish centers, which were in Spain, in Iraq. There was something going on still in northern Israel. Okay, but they did have two big yeshivas in Germany, in Western Germany, the Rhineland, in Mainz and in Worms. And Rashi went to the yeshiva in Worms. Now, we know the names of his rebbes. We don't know, if we know little about Rashi, we know pretty little about his rebbes too. He went in his early teens, he went off to yeshiva, maybe probably right after Bar Mitzvah or something like that.
What
was
it called?
What?
Worms
and Mainz, M-A-I-N-Z, or in Hebrew, Magensa. There's a family named Agenzi. That's the Jewish name of that town. I don't know why there are two different names. Probably one's German, one's French. I don't know. Anyhow, we know the names of his rabbis. Oh, let me say one thing before I get to the names of his rabbis. Rashi was born in 1040. That was the same year that Rabbeinu Gershom died. Rabbeinu Gershom, during his lifetime, was the Godol Hador in Ashkenazi Jewry. And he made certain takanos that Ashkenazim still keep today. So the best known one is the ban against polygamy. Also, he made a theorem against reading other people's mail. A couple other things, but it's the best one. You know, theorem de Rabbeinu Gershom means don't marry two wives. All right, so he was the leading rabbinic figure in Ashkenazi Jewry in his day, and Rashi's rabbis were all students of his. I mean, almost all. His main rabbis were students of his. We know the names of his rabbis. We don't know too much about them. His main rabbi who he learned with till his mid-20s was named Rabbi Yaakov ben Yakar. When Rabbi Yaakov ben Yakar died, he made Rabbi Yitzchok Halevi his main Rebbe. We know also that he learned from a Rabbi Yitzchok by Rabbi Yehuda. And we know also that he learned from his uncle, whose name was Rabbi Shimon. His father was evidently a scholar as well, probably not of the same, you know, these were the Gedolim of Ashkenazi Jewry in those days. His father was a scholar, but evidently not of that magnitude. Rashi was descended, I think through his mother's side, he was descended from Rabbi Yochanan HaSandler, one of the Tanoim, who was descended from Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, who was descended from David HaMelech. Okay, so he went to yeshiva in Germany very young. Rashi was a grandfather by the age of 31. He got married at 15. Had his first daughter at 16, and she must have had a child when she was 13 or 14 years old. Yep. Okay. What? 31 when he was a grandfather. Okay. Did she? No. She had more children. Now Rashi had three daughters, and this book doesn't mention anything about them putting on tefillin. Okay, I looked. I flipped through it. I didn't read every single word, but I think I looked at the relevant places. Doesn't say anything about his daughters wearing tefillin. Let's see. We know his oldest daughter was named Yocheved. Now, here's a little. The genealogy here, the Bali Tosis, you can spend a week studying it. But let me just give you the main, the first generation here. Rashi's daughter Yocheved married somebody named Rabbi Meir, and she had among her sons the Rashbam, right? Who was the oldest one? He was born when Rashi was about 45, and he was a student of Rashi yet. So that means his grandfather passed away when he was about 20, but that gave him enough time to study Torah from him. Now, even more illustrious than the Rashbam was his younger brother, Rabbeinu Tam. Rashbam was the oldest of Yocheved Bas Rashi's children. Then came Rabbeinu Tam. What did you ask? I don't know. I don't know, but at the rate they were going in those days, probably yes.
Possible.
What?
Do you think it's possible if he lived to see the Rashbam?
He was 20. You figure Rashbam got married when he was 16 at the oldest, right? Probably had a 3-year-old already. Yeah. Okay. And then another one of the Bali Tosfos, who's quoted often, a third brother was the Rivam, and there was a fourth brother who we know very little about, but he was evidently a Talmud Chacham of a high caliber. He was known as Rabbi Shlomo Hamadakdek. Now, does that mean he knew Diktuk, or does that mean he made Diukim? I don't know. But he got that nickname. Must have been a reason. Okay. Now, then his second daughter was named Miriam. Oh, she had some illustrious granddaughter, grandchild also.
who she married.
We know who she married. Her husband has a great claim to fame, other than being Rashi's son-in-law. Her husband was named Rabbi Yehuda Bar Nosson. And Rashi, one of the things he was working on when he was Nifter was the Perish on Maseches Makos. And on Daf Yud Tes Amud Beis, it says, in the Rashi on Shas, he opened up Yud Tes Amud Beis, parentheses in the Rashi, Rashi was Nifter when he got up to here in Makos, and the rest of the Perish on the Masechta is from his son-in-law, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Nosson. Yes?
Yeah,
that's where the Rashbam takes over, and Daf Yud Ches, correct.
Okay.
Correct. Well, that so shows morning Seder, afternoon Seder, it was morning Seder.
He did
more than one draft.
What we have now, how much of the 30?
Okay. The only ones that for sure aren't Rashi are the last three quarters of Bava Basra, the last three blot of Makos, the Perish on Nazir that looks like Rashi. There is no way that it's Rashi. Okay, it's not Rashi. Now, on Maseches Nedarim and Maseches Sochim, you have Rashi in the Shas, but there, for some reason, Rashi is not the main Perish that's learned on those Masechtos. I remember hearing that people think it's questionable whether that's authentic Rashi. I don't know. I don't know about Nedarim. Arvei Pesachim sure seems like Rashi to me. I don't know why people say that it's not genuine. All right, Moed Katan, the Perush that we have isn't Rashi, but we do have the authentic Rashi. You have to buy it as a separate volume. Tinus, they say that the Perush that we have, a lot of people say it's not Rashi. But I don't know, but they're close enough to Rashi that they fooled a lot of people. You know, the one on Nozir, there are a lot of theories. The most recent one is it's one of the Balitosos Rabbeinu Eliezer Mimetz. Whoever they are first-rate Ashkenazi Rishonim. Okay, but who they are,
I don't know. They're writing in a Rashi style.
They're writing, well, except the one in Nozir. The one in Nozir is not even Rashi style. Tinus and Moed Katan, you could think it's Rashi.
And then the rest of it is...
What?
The rest of Shas is all Rashi.
The rest of Shas is all Rashi. In other words, over 90% of Shas we have genuine Rashi.
Well, and he for sure, he knew all of this. He probably written things about those parts of Shas too. He just hadn't finished it.
So what they say, Rashi, it's pretty clear, did many drafts. So could be on Nedarim and Arvei Pesachim, even though I'm pretty sure it's authentic Rashi, maybe people don't learn it because it's an early draft. And the other ones, maybe we just didn't get the final drafts. I don't know. Yeah, but there's no question that he went through all the Shas the way you're supposed to, the way he was supposed to. All right, so that was his daughter Miriam. She was married to Rivan. I can't find offhand who her illustrious offspring was, but I'm not going to spend time looking for it. Then he had one other daughter who we know very little about. Her name was Rachel, and we don't know who she was married to. There are theories, but nobody really knows. Okay, so he got married at 15, and he spent several... Excuse me, I made a mistake. He got married in France before he went to yeshiva. He went to Kolo when he was after he got married, at the age of 17. That's when he went to Worms. Okay, and he learned in great poverty there. But he was clearly bound for greatness. He was recognized as an outstanding student. Already at the age of 18, he would hold his own with his rebbes in the yeshiva. And he writes that when he was 18 years old, his rebbe, Rabbeinu Yaakov Ben Yakar, shouted at him for fighting too much in shiur with him. At the age of 20, he went back to France, and at the age of 21, went back to Germany.
So He
spent 3 years in Worms, a year back home, then he went back to Worms. He was learning there in Magenza. Okay.
Is he well known?
Rashi's Rebbe?
Who? Rashi and Rishtam.
He was clearly at the top of the yeshiva at that time. You know, he was what?
Was he well known? Like,
was he like a Rambam who was a celebrity of his time?
Yes. Yes. There's no question that by the time he was in his 30s, he was the posek of Ashkenazi Jewry. When his rebbes passed away, when the students of Reino Gershom died out, Rashi was it. You know, there was no competition.
Is it known that he was going to become as big as he was? Or is it big as he became?
Did who know when?
Like, was it known that he was like, that all this was going to happen, like, in the future? Like,
I don't, I mean, they didn't have anybody predicting it or anything. I know he must have been an extraordinary personality. His main rebbe was Rabbeinu Yaakov ben Yakar. At the age of 25, he went back to Troye or whatever, and he stayed there for the rest of his life. His second daughter didn't get married. His daughter got married when he was 29. It says that over here. Okay. And his rebbes died when he was 30. Rabbeinu Yaakov ben Yakar died when he was 25, but the two Rabbeinu Yitzchaks, who he learned from afterwards, died when he was 30. There are some legends that he went into Golus in his 30s, but, we have to take that with a grain of salt.
Where is he going to
go? He just wandered. They're going to go into this too. It was just, when you're in a certain madrega, that's part of your avoda. You put yourself in the... It's a kapora for certain averus. And when the Vilna Gaon did it, he went to... they say he went to all over Europe looking at ancient manuscripts of the Talmud to be able to determine what the correct yeshiva was.
Did Rashi open up any yeshivas when he came back?
He had his yeshiva in Troye. Yeah, he had students. He had students.
That was the first one, I guess.
I think that was the only one he had. He left. He lived the rest of his life. You know, after he left Germany, he settled down there. Now, when he was 56 years old, 9 years before he was nifter,
he stayed in France when he came back.
Yeah.
He never went back to Germany?
No. I mean, he went back for a visit or something.
At age 20, so he's been 3 years.
25. Then he went back when he was 21, stayed till he was 25.
Did he ever come here?
What, pardon me?
Did he ever come here?
To Eretz Yisrael? Never, never. At the age of 56, the first crusade took place. All kinds of stories about him and one of the crusaders, miracle stories. Again, maybe they were true, I couldn't tell you where the stories. One of his rebbes, not one of his main rebbes, but one of his rebbes was still there in Mainz. His name was Rabbeinu Colonimus of Rome. He was killed in the Crusades. What else is there? Yeah, we don't know too well which years he wrote on which Masechtos or which books of Tanakh. He was not a healthy man in his old age. He writes in certain places that in his Tshuvos and Halacha, he writes, I couldn't write this by hand. I had to dictate to somebody because of the state of my health. And, somebody wrote an article recently, I don't even remember where they questioned whether Rashi made a living from selling wine. I mean, I don't know how you can question it because he says himself in his Tshuvos that that's what he did. So he was a wine merchant.
Holding true in when he says you have to drink wine and fur, and he just wrote that to promote his own business? That should
I can't believe that he didn't write it. The Gemara wrote it.
Yeah. In Megillah, right? He says that when it says to
Lipsume.
Yeah, it means like biyai, right?
But that's what the word means. He didn't make that up. That wasn't. He wouldn't do anything like that. One thing that all people who write about him mention, and they mention this with the little we have about his Rebbe, Rabbeinu Yaakov ben Yakar, they say it's about him too, people were struck by his humility. Okay, now, one thing, another, his Yortzeit, the 29th of Tammuz, right, we've got close to 3 months till his Yortzeit comes up. And we do not know where he was buried.
Is there no, like, Arizal, like, this is where Rashi's soul is placed?
No. He may have been buried in the cemetery of Worms, which is the oldest standing cemetery in Europe, but he may have been buried in Troyes. So we just don't know where he was buried. There must have been a marker when he was buried, but we don't have it anymore, and there's no tradition.
How close is Troyes to Paris?
By our standards, not too far. I couldn't tell you exactly. I can't believe it's 200 miles. I don't recall. I haven't run across him mentioning Paris.
About his daughters.
His daughters? I don't know where they went. I don't know where they lived. Were they buried?
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody knows.
Yeah, because if you believe that if they were buried together, you can assume that they were buried with their father, no?
It's possible. It's possible.
Were their son-in-law buried?
Well, who was this woman married? Do you know anything who she was?
We know his father was named Yitzchak, and he was a learned man. That's all we know. We know very little about his mother, other than that she descended from Yochanan Sandler, and that her brother Shimon was a Talmud. Rabbi Shimon was a Talmud Chacham, from whom Rashi learned. No, we don't know his father. We don't know too much about it. There are more facts, and but.
So he was Ben David on his mother's side.
Yeah. Okay, now. That's one thing. Another thing. We spent a couple of classes. All right, remember the big sentence that Rashi, where the only place where he comes close to telling us what his theme is in this Perush on Tanakh is Vani lo dosi el liyashe pshuto shel mikra ula havia midrashim amiyashrus dvar es advarim davar davor al ofanov. Right? I'm only coming here for pshat and for midrashim that fit things with the words in their proper setting. And we spent a little time trying to define what does it mean to fit the words in their proper setting. And my theory, and I brought you this Rashi in Tehillim, is that Rashi will give the midrashic interpretation precedence over the pshat interpretation if it fits the whole context well, right? He'll take a kapitel, a chapter in Tehillim that seems to be talking about David HaMelech, but you can take that whole chapter and very nicely explain it about Daniel. So he'll say, if Chazal do that, that's in my parish, even though it's not simple pshat. Okay, that's my theory, and I found a Rashi in Shir Shirim. I won't say it's a proof to me, but I will say it supports me. So turn to Shir HaShirim, Perek Hey, Pasuk Yud Beis. Yud Beis. Okay, so here the woman who is presently banished from her husband is singing the praises of her husband. And Rashi and Shir HaShirim, he explains the text on two levels. He explains it, simple meaning of the words, this woman singing the praises of her husband, what are these praises? And then, what does it represent? Okay, then that's based on Midrashim. So let's look at the pasuk. Einav kiyonim, his eyes are like doves. Alaf kimayim, when they're looking at the running waters, the brooks of waters. Rochatzos bechalov, they wash in milk. These doves, I think, are washing themselves. No, the eyes of my husband, my beloved, are washed in milk. I guess that's the whites of his eyes. Yoshvos al milais. They sit nicely in the sockets for the eyes. They fill the sockets nicely. Okay, so on the simple level, she's saying, boy, my beloved has gorgeous eyes. Okay, now, Rashi, after going through this part in the simple way, he at length brings down midrashic interpretations. Oh, I don't know, this is towards the end there. You have a lot of Rashi after Pasuk Tezayin?
Yeah,
you have a lot of Rashi after Pasuk Tezayin. So, You see, right about in the middle, you see a Dibur Maskel Rochatzos Bechalov. Okay. No, you know, go up to the Dibur Maskel Yoshvos Al Miles. You see the a few lines above Rochatzos Bechalov, right? You see what I'm talking about? Yoshvos Al Miles. Then a little, you have there Dover Acher Talmid Chamim. Shakarosh Baruch Hu Nosnam Einayim. You hear what I'm reading from? Everybody have it? Okay. So, look at one midrashic interpretation that Rashi brings down. Talmidei Chachamim, Shakarosh Baruch Hu Nosnim Einayim Lohayir Laolam. These eyes are Talmidei Chachamim that Kosh Baruch Hu gives them, made them into eyes to, you know, to provide light for the world. Kishem Shainayim Meirim Laolam, just as eyes provide man with vision. Kiyonim, your eyes are like, the Talmid Chacham are like doves. Hanodadim mishovach l'shofach, they wander from nest to nest. Levakesh ochlam, to seek their food. You can see Rashi talking about his own experiences here, right? Kachim bochim mirashol shoponi chacham lebeis hameder shoponi chacham levakesh amei Torah. So the Talmid Chacham are like the doves. They go from one Talmid Chacham's beis hamederish to another to seek the meaning of Torah. Al afikei mayim, they're on brooks of water. Al batei midrashos, that these are batei midrash, shehei motzei mayim shel Torah, that bring forth the water of Torah. Okay. Rochavos, rochatzos bechalov. Alright, let me skip a line or two here. I don't want to get into any dictic over here. All right, but when you, just skip a sentence. Hey, mitzach tzachim atzman b'cholov shel Torah. They clean themselves, they polish themselves with the milk of Torah. Umalavnim sisareha ustumoseha. And they whiten, in other words, they make clear its secrets and its vague statements. The Talmid Chacham, he's praising the Talmid Chacham, Talmid Chacham. Now, here's the punchline that I'm looking for. Yoshvos al miles. They sit on the filling. You know, they're like, before, it means the eyes sit nicely in the sockets, they fit nicely. Look at this. Me'ashvim dvarim al ofanehem. They resolve the words in their setting. According to Rashi, the Pasuk in Tanakh praises this type of learning. When we're singing the praises of Talmid Chachamim, what do we say about them? Oh, they're Moser Nefesh, they wander from place to from one Rebbe to another. And they clarify the secrets and the mysteries and the vague statements in the Torah. And what do? They say pshat that fits every words into their setting. I said the word pshat, excuse me. They give an interpretation that fits the words to Rashi. You see, based on this, pshat isn't the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is to, I mean, it's not the only goal, but this great praiseworthy thing that Talmid Chacham do is make text coherent. That's it. Make the text coherent. That means you read it through from beginning to end, you get a unified and clear message that comes from the words, or at least it fits into the words. Right? Now, 99% of the time, that's going to be pshat. If Medrash does that, that's okay. As long as it's something that fits everything together. Me'yashiv dvorim al ofanehem. Rashi doesn't say, oh, these Talmid Chacham are great, they use pshat. No. They explain texts coherently. The words fit together. Now, if pshat does that, we'll go with pshat. If something else does that, okay. As long as I'm making the text coherent, not bits and pieces, not jerky, right? Okay. Now I'm going to show you something neat that fits in both with what I just told you.
That was and, you'd bet.
Yeah, hey, you'd bet. And this will add a dimension to our biography of Rashi. Page 1 and page 2.
Is that?
What?
Are they going to do that?
No, that's okay.
Yeah, and in the arts book, all of Shri Shri is our allegorical rendering following Rashi.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But Rashi is Shan and the allegory. Okay. Now, what I'm giving you here is, oh no, I don't have page one. What is it? Did somebody get to page one? Torah Tmima is page one. It says only have two pages in Torah Tmima. I'm sorry. Well, at least you get a mixed page too. Alright. Now, Rashi wrote Piyutim.
There's one of these, I think maybe the one that we're that I'm going to read with you right now, we actually say during the Slichos in Elul. He wrote, I don't know how many he wrote, we have seven of them. Oh, we've got time. Let's start from the beginning of this piyut. By the way, I've looked at these piyutim, and you know what somebody really ought to do? Something to do an annotated perush on these piyutim would be wonderful. But to do it, you need somebody who knows all of Tanakh and all of Shas and all of Midrashim, and has it on his fingertips, like the author. Oh, like the author is impossible, but because he's alluding to all kinds of things. Let me plow through it. We're going to miss, you know, at least 90% of what he means. Yeah, halavai. Halavai could. Okay. Torah HaTamima, the perfect Torah. Alpayim Keduma. 2,000 years before, I think maybe the world was created 2,000 years before it was given. I don't know what it means. Chalina Pnei El, please beseech the face of God. Ba'ad Yonatan Tama, on behalf of the perfect dove. We're begging the Torah to activate God's Rachmanis on us. Shikdi Bitachina, persevere in supplication. Pnei Shochein Ma'ona, towards the face of he who dwells in his abode, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Lerachem Oskayech, please beg him to have mercy on those who deal with you, those who are Oskim B'Divrei Torah, right? B'chol Rega Ma'ona, those who deal with you in every moment, every season. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Torah, beg HaKadosh Baruch Hu to have Rachmanis on those who learn you B'Hasmada. Ron Asiya Lashmiya. They sang about doing before hearing. Oh, as I said before, they sang doing for hearing. It's alluding to the Naseh V'Nishma. Am Yisrael sang Naseh V'Nishma. Hikdimu Dor Dea. It's an inverted sentence. The generation of knowledge, that's the generation in the desert, they put ahead their singing about Asiya to Shmiya. They said Naseh before Nishma. Besav Rigyonim, in their desire for, I don't know what the word Rigyonim means, probably related to the word Esrog, which means something desirable. In their desire for, I guess it's some nice way of referring to the Torah. Amarayich lihishtashah, to enjoy themselves with your statements. In other words, Am Yisrael was so anxious to accept the Torah that they said Naseh V'Nishma. Kotsu Chosein V'Chason L'Kabel Mimidbar Matan. The father-in-law and the son-in-law were disgusted, were revolted by accepting the gift from the desert. You know what that's referring to? You find in the Piyutim, this is the one I think, we say this one day during the Slichus. The father-in-law and the son-in-law, that's code for Yishmael and Esav. Esav married Yishmael's daughter. So this is Esav and Yishmael rejecting the Torah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu offered them. They were revolted, they were too revolted to accept the gift from the desert. The Hitir Isuremo, this is some pasuk, Amad Vayater Goyim. He went and released the nations, that the Gemara learns out from there that the mitzvahs, other than the seven mitzvahs, aren't binding on the Goyim. Hitir Isuremo, he permitted their prohibitions, Kabahemos Lahashvoson, to equate them to animals. Not a real politically correct poem over here. Sofa B'nei Hasidim, he saw the sons of the pious, of the devout, that's us, I guess, Bahar Chemed Agudim joined together at the Mount of Desire, Unasam Alomo, and he gave it to them, the Torah, Bekolos V'lapidim, with thunder and flames. Ponim El Ponim Diber M'ma'onim, face to face, he spoke from his abodes, Lishnei Ne'emonim, to two faithful ones, Tayorim, explorers, Viturbionim, I don't know what that means, but undoubtedly he's referring to Moshe and Aaron. Itos Arba'im, for 40 time periods, Lamodeich Birakiim, he studied you in the skies. This is Moshe Rabbeinu. Anov Mikol Yitzir, he who was humble than any creature, Hatov V'Hanoim, the good and the delightful. Now listen to this, this is the one I was looking for. Sider Beis Ulpan, he arranged an academy, Uve'er Kol Mutzpan, and he clarified everything that was concealed, Limad Davar Davur Metukan Al Ofan, he taught each word spoken fixed in its setting. When Rashi wants to praise Moshe Rabbeinu, what a great teacher he is, what's the way he praises him? Davar Davur Al Ofanov, that pasuk that he keeps quoting, every word fit in its setting. That's how wonderfully Moshe Rabbeinu taught us. And this is how Rashi chose. This is the style he adopted. He wants to teach us the way Moshe Rabbeinu taught us. And the way you teach is to make the meaning coherent, fit into the entire context.
Wasn't that the purpose of the oral tradition, to put the words of the written Torah in their proper setting?
That's one facet of it. You have drash, as Rashi mentions, there is drash that takes a pasuk or a phrase out of context completely. Okay? That's a part of the Torah, and without it, the Torah is distorted, right? But it's not Rashi's agenda. And it evidently wasn't the main agenda. Moshe Rabbeinu taught us the entire Torah. But what really impresses Rashi, so to speak, is that he taught it. He did teach it in at least one of the dimensions of Torah that he taught was fitting everything into context, every word making sense where it is. Okay, gentlemen, to be continued. All right, this segment is finished. Next week, unless I come up with something good and unlock the home, we'll continue with Rashi. Rashi was a poet.
Yeah.